Welcome to Politics Done Right. I am your host, Egberto Willis. This is a progressive program that will take the mystery out of politics. This is the program that will encourage you to make sure government becomes we the people. Whether you are liberal, progressive, conservative, or otherwise, you get to air your point of view. We are an independent media outlet that, unlike mainstream media beholden to corporations, we only owe allegiance to you. Remember, you can also send me a tweet at EGBERTOWILLIES. That is at Egberto Willis. Let us engage. It is Politics Done Right. Welcome to Politics Done Right. From the studios of KPFT 90.1 FM Houston, your community radio station, we have a great program for you today.
So what is this great program that I'm talking about? Well, today it's actually very, very, very special. Sixto Wagan is the director, the project director for the BIPOC Arts Network and Fund. He leads BANF along with a 7-member steering committee and a 9-member accountability and advisory council made up of a diverse group of artists, curators, scholars, organizational leaders, and foundation partners who guide goals and priorities. Mr. Wagan will introduce the audience to funds offering grants to BIPOC artists in Houston. So, in the interview, you will hear him tell you how exactly those of you in Houston and in other cities as well, surrounding areas, can actually take advantage of several million dollars in funding for BIPOC, arts, culture, and much more. Secondly, the co-founder and national coordinator of RootsAction.org, Norman Solomon, recently published the article, "Stop Calling the Military Budget a Defense Budget," that everyone must read as soon as possible. He wrote the following, he stated that liberals need to stop doing this. Solomon expanded on the article in our interview as he tied this pilfering with our socioeconomic state. It is an important note that puts our national spending in perspective. Then, of course, there is Senator from the poorest state, one most dependent on government, Joe Manchin, gave them the finger in this entire rant. Joe Manchin proved in this one snippet who he really is. He cares nothing about his constituents. He pretty much threw them under the bus. And lastly, we have retired General H.R. McMaster used Farid Sakara GPS to promote increased defense spending using what I call the other big lie. Here is the truth. Farid Sakaria was discussing the strained relationship between the United States and China. He pointed out the unfortunate nature of General Milley having to use back channels to assure Chinese that the U.S. did not have any ill intent. And what did McMaster do? McMaster made believe that somehow the United States is behind in military spending and that China increased its budget by over 400%. By the way, that 400% means it's still a third of what we have. So he believes the U.S. needs to spend more money. What gives? I want to thank Mike Sherrill from Austin, Texas, for a wonderful, wonderful contribution to our campaign. I want to ask all of you that are listening to be sure to follow in the footsteps of Mike Sherrill, who wants to ensure that we have here in Southeast Texas and Texas, and actually throughout the entire country and the world, because we're streaming as well, that we can keep doing what we do.
Check this out. We have a great show for you today. Do remember, we are in Fund Drive right now, but you are still getting yourself a great program that we work at putting together for you. Some that you may know on a small level, some that you may not know at all. That's why we are here. Politics Done Right, KPFT 90.1 FM, Houston. We're asking you to invest in this community radio station. But why? Because, folks, there's a lot of media out there, but it's not media that you control. It's not media that has your interests at hand. When we're talking about community radio, when we're talking about this community radio station, KPFT 90.1 FM, we're talking about a station that is solely funded by whom? You. And if it is funded by you, our loyalty is to you. Most other stations, commercial stations, they're funded by their advertisers, and their advertiser needs to program you. And they need to have you in a particular modal. That is why our politics is so bad. Because we need you uninformed. Politics Done Right doesn't believe in that. Politics Done Right, KPFT 90.1 FM, Pacifica Network, we don't believe that. We believe that it is essential that you are in control. It is essential that you support us so that we can feed the ethos, that we can give, we can enlighten with what is the absolute truth. In that light, I'm asking you to please call 713-526-5738 or go to kpft.org and support us. You can support us with a $25 membership, a $40 membership, or you can get any one of our gifts that you find there. Please do this in the name of Politics Done Right. Also, remember that you can get one of my several books out there. As I See It, Class Warfare, The Only Resort to Right-Wing Doom, for a contribution of $120. It's Worth It, How to Talk to Your Right-Wing Relatives, Friends, and Neighbors, for a contribution of $120. How to Make America Utopia, Take Away the Economy from Those Who Rigged It, pledge of $120. You can get any two of those books for $200, any three of those books for $250. That is to support our station. And all those books, I promise you, give you all that you need to have that conversation across the board to ensure, to help us make a better America. So please support us. Please support KPFT 90.1 FM Houston. Call 713-526-5738 or visit kpft.org.
Senator Manchin is from the second poorest, if not the poorest state in the nation. They are completely dependent on government, and they have not created a society in which the private sector feels a responsibility for the wretchedness in which it allows its citizens to live, from coal mining and all these destructive natures, the destructions to nature, pollution of their creeks. These people live in utter hell in that part of Appalachia, Senator Manchin's state. And he has the nerve to say this with it, where it comes to the infrastructure bill. Check this out, then we'll take it on the other side.
You have a good piece of legislation. Don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. Take this one. Let's sit down and work what we can to the others and get what we can get.
Senator, we can get done. Senator, Democrats just say they need a bottom line from you. They just need a number. Why can't you just give them a number?
We're going to give them basically the needs we have. Okay, they ought to be able to take that. We're in different places, but we want something to be done. We both want to help the people in need. We should be targeted. Our children on the front end. Our seniors on the back end. Basically, a tax code. We all agree that we voted against the 2017 tax repeal. Tax cuts. We voted against it. Don't you think that would be the uniting part to start to fix the tax code?
Why did you not?
Ocasio Cortez just a short time ago said that infrastructure should be paused. As you know, that vote may or may not come up today. You're calling for a pause on reconciliation. At this point, does everything need to be paused?
First of all, you got a bipartisan bill that came over with 69 votes. You got something that's been needed for 30 years. The other they have is aspirational. We'd like to help everybody. We need to look at that. The reason I asked for a pause, I'm still concerned about inflation. I'm still concerned. Right now, the dollar store, if you saw that today, the breaking news on that, the dollar store's not going to be the dollar anymore. It's going to be $1.25, $1.50. An awful lot of people in West Virginia that shop at the dollar stores, that's an increase, a lot. So we'll just say, listen, let's do what we can do. There's a lot of good things we can do. And then next year, if they want to come back and do even...
How about those down today?
Well, the vote goes down today. It's they voted it down. I voted for it. They have to go back and explain. I don't think we need bridges fixed in my state. I don't think we need roads fixed. I don't think we need internet, water, sewer, rail, transportation. We need all that in West Virginia. So I voted for it. If they can explain it.
What happens to negotiations today if bipartisan infrastructure does not pass the House or does not come up?
It makes it more challenging. I'm rational. I'm going to work and talk with people. But the bottom line is it makes it very hard because then people get more dug in. And you don't need to. You've got a piece of legislation that's gone through the total process over here. They've looked at that, okay? And it's a piece of legislation that helps America. It sends a very strong signal. It makes our economy healthier. It gives work, my God, full work with good paying jobs for 8 years. We haven't done anything like this. And I'm willing to talk and work on the other. I've said that in good faith.
Do you want the tax cuts or reforming the 2017 tax cuts to be basically the nuts and bolts of the reconciliation, and then you want the social programs and all of that to be kind of negotiated out separately from there?
You've got to pick your priorities like you would do in your own life. You figure what resources you have, how much money, and then the things you really want. You can't get everything. So you take the most highest priority or the highest need you have. Our children need help, okay? Families that want to go to work and ensure their work ethic, means testing means that are we targeting the people that need it or getting it? I cannot accept our economy or basically our society moving towards an entitlement mentality that you're entitled, okay? I'm more of a rewardee because I can help those who really need help if those who can help themselves do so.
First of all, aspirational. Is it aspirational to provide assistance to a woman who in this society happens to be the major caretaker and have to find somewhere to put their kids so they can get a job that pays them a livable wage? Is it aspirational that in a state like West Virginia that you try to get your state more educated so that they can have jobs that make them not have to shop at a dollar store? Is it aspirational to ask all these questions that talk about the social being, that talks about humanity, but you're ready to build bridges? But you're ready to do all these things. And if women are the major caretakers of children and can't find somewhere to put them that's reasonable, that means as well that all these things you're talking about, infrastructure, simply goes to who? A certain kind of men. Folks, understand what he's saying. First of all, he also doesn't understand economics. He said, oh, the dollar is soaring. The dollar is soaring, which is a bad thing. The dollar store has just increased and said it's not a dollar anymore, but $1.25. Well, no. If you looked at what happened with the dollar store, they sell a lot of stuff from overseas. If the dollar price if the dollar is getting stronger, those things they bring from overseas is cheaper. And that's what they sell in the dollar stores. And they're still saying, oh, we are going to make it $1.25. You know what happened on the stock market as soon as they announced that? Dollar store stock soared. Yet another way of screwing the middle class and the poor. And then you try to tell them that it's because of inflation. Folks, understand how we are constantly being played. It's an entitlement society, but it's not the entitlement of the middle class. It's not the entitlement of the poor. It's the entitlement of the rich. It's the entitlement of the corporation. It's entitlement of those who pay no taxes. We all know what the big lie is, you know, but do you know what the other big lie is? I want you to listen to General Max Masters on Farid Zakaria, and you'll understand how they get away decade after decade with the next big lie, or I should say with the other big lie. Yes, Trump big lie about winning the election is a big one, but maybe this one is even bigger. Check this out.
China today. They're not very good. There's not much communication, not much contact. The report of General Milley calling his Chinese counterpart in the middle of the American crisis because he got wind of the fact that the Chinese thought that the U.S. was about to invade. This all sounds very scary. Shouldn't we have better communications with the Chinese?
Well, there are communications with the Chinese. You just saw President Biden speak with Xi Jinping. You saw the U.S. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan meet with Yang Jianshu. The problem is a lot of times that communication really doesn't amount to much. And what you're seeing is really a Chinese Communist Party that is much, much more aggressive, Fareed. And we've seen it internationally, right, with this wolf warrior diplomacy. I mentioned the campaign of economic coercion aimed at Australia. So I think having lines of communication open are one thing, but I don't know if the Chinese Communist Party leadership on the other end is listening. I think that they also have a perception these days, Fareed, that we're weak, right? They've been watching the traumas we've gone through, you know, of a pandemic, a recession associated with a pandemic, the social and racial divisions laid bare by George Floyd's murder, the vitriolic partisanship that culminated in an assault on the Capitol. And I think they're looking at all this and thinking, hey, the United States is weak. If they're also looking at our defense budget, I don't think is doing enough, Fareed, to make up for really what has been a bow wave of deferred modernization to answer some of the asymmetric capabilities that the Chinese Communist Party, People's Liberation Army have developed. I mean, they have increased their defense spending 400% since 1995. And so I think it's really important for the United States, Japan, Australia, and we saw the AUKUS agreement, right, between Australia, the UK, and the United States. These are all positive developments. But I'll tell you, Fareed, we're behind, as you mentioned. You know, in a speech just a few days ago, the Taiwanese Minister of Defense said, hey, by 2025, the People's Liberation Army may be able to accomplish its objectives on Taiwan by the use of force at low cost.
I am lost. Why did Fareed Zakaria just stay there and allow him to say, we are behind? Our military is behind. We got to build more. We have to spend more on the military. Listen to this number. America spends more than the next eight countries combined on their defense budget. Again, more than the next eight countries combined. China has more than four times the population of the United States. And still, they have a third or probably about 30%, or actually about a third of their spending that we have. We spend about $600-700 billion a year, plus or minus. They spend $250 billion a year, plus or minus. In other words, we multiply several times in the amount we spend compared to them. So what the hell are we talking about? We are behind. We are behind. We should be cutting our budget completely way down. Again, on the per capita basis, China is spending pennies compared to what the United States is spending. Why do we tolerate this type of information? Fareed Zakaria is a straight shooter. It seems like he kind of wanted to cut off the general when the general started to say, we are behind. I mean, he kind of got in there. I didn't play the entire cut. He cut the conversation right there. But he should have gone out of his way to say, how can we say we're behind when we're two or three times more in spending than China, when we spend more than eight other countries combined for our defense? This is a sham, and folks, you have to understand it so that when the Republicans put out stuff about, we need to fund the military, or the right-wing Democrats put out, we need to fund the military, you know that they are simply pulling one over you. You need to fund Americans. That's what needs to be funded. We have a very special guest. He has a whole lot to talk about. Sixto Wagan is the project director for the BIPOC Arts Network and Fund. He leads BANF along with a 7-member board steering committee and a 9-member accountability and advisory council made up of a diverse group of artists, curators, scholars, organizational leaders, and foundation partners who guide goals and priorities. Very important work. It's my pleasure to have you on Politics Done Right, Mr. Wagan. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for being part of this and having this conversation with us.
Well, I think this is important because it is you know, we talk about the arts, we talk about all these types of issues, and seldom do we see some of the works of the authors, if you understand what I mean. So why don't you tell me a little bit about BANF?
So it is a multi-year initiative that was founded as part of the Ford Foundation's America's Cultural Treasures Initiative, and which really looked at understanding in the moment of COVID-19 and the social reckoning resurgence, that there is needs in order to address the historical inequities in terms of funding and funding crisis for our communities of color. And that not only was this a national initiative, but it, Ford Foundation invited regional foundations to join in and to help work on the work and the ideas that we have been talking over many years around equity and funding. And Houston Endowment stepped up and actually invited a number of other local foundations, including Kinder, Powell Foundation, the Brown Foundation, and the Cullen Foundation, in order to join us to really explore what it would look like in order to have an opportunity to address this historical fund, like exclusion, and create a collective approach that brings community leaders into the same room, and to actually understand how to create work and support artists and communities of color, and help the communities of color actually decide how that money should be spent.
I'm going to ask you sort of a silly question, but I think for a greater audience, it's a very important question. Are there, we have artists all over the country, all over Houston, all over major cities as well. We take a look on TV and we see several artists that would fit the BIPOC qualifications. But generally, those are the megastars, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Many would then ask, is there really some difference between what BIPOC artists versus the majority experience? Because again, you know, perception is a lot different than reality.
Well, I think that this is also, like, you bring up multiple, like, really important points on multiple levels. And I think that when we look on the national, international level, we can actually identify some superstars and some significant people. But the amount of energy and effort that it took them in order to become the superstars, in order for them to recognize the communities of support that it took for them to actually achieve that, that's actually part of what we need to address. Because we have, let's just take Houston's Beyoncé. I'm like, great, but Beyoncé wouldn't be Beyoncé if she didn't have the relationship in the churches that actually helped her understand music and understand what it meant to be part of what it meant to be a Black musician. And then, and in that aspect, then building other communities around that and other communities of support. So I think that what we also are looking at is, it's not just about being a superstar, but how do you actually be an amazing artist within this community? How do you actually do the work that's not just about the music, that's not about a commercial aspect, but actually just explores and helps you understand how to be you? I'm like, let me just make this a little bit personal in terms of the fact that I grew up as a child of immigrants in St. Louis, Missouri, and my parents with the Valorias and other families actually created the Filipino American Society, in which I spent much of my adolescent years learning Filipino folk dance. And that is not ever going to be a commercial success, but it was a really important grounding for me about what it meant to be Filipino American in a community where the majority of the people around me were white. And I think that this is the type of work that we're interested in, is not just the platinum level success or the international success, but really how do our communities of color come together in order to celebrate being us and to celebrate being us? And how do new generations recognize that what does it mean to be Black, Latina, like Afro-Latina, and all of these things simultaneously? And utilizing our culture, our music, our visual arts, our dance, our song, as a way in order to explore, celebrate, and challenge that.
You know what I love about that, Mr. Wagan, is interesting, because the multiculturalism that occurs in America within the, let's even say, the arts community,
and watching folks enjoying it all and having a different groups having different levels of success because of underlying socioeconomic conditions within a country means exactly or points exactly, in my opinion, to the needs of a network like yours. In other words, you pointed out Houston. Houston has a lot of bars. Houston has a lot of these other industries that everybody partakes of. But if you go to most bars, the underrepresentation of the artists would be prevalent. How then does that become equal, not equalized, but meritorized equally?
Well, I think that, you know, I think that that's actually one of the questions that we have, and that's a part of what we're doing in terms of learning and exploration. And I think that one of the things in which we are developing this network, not to identify what we believe is going to be the ultimate aspects of success.
Right.
I think that where we need to shift is that, what do our communities and what do our artists, what do our arts organizations, where are they? What do they think is successful for them? And what is important for them? Because I think that there's a lot of work that's happening, particularly when we look at arts education, when we look at murals and interaction, it is the value of the one-on-one, the value of the small communities is as significant to many of our artists as it is to be putting into the larger bands or the bars and those spaces. And in fact, some of these spaces in which being able to celebrate that within the communities that, you know, and within the parks, within the green spaces, within all the places in which we actually live, is perhaps more important than putting it into places in which we have people who don't understand, who are unfamiliar with this and unfamiliar with the histories and unfamiliar with the traditions. So how do we build both of these things? How do we make sure that the artists that we and the arts organizations that we're supporting actually help to determine what is important to them and make sure that we actually have, you know, that it's not just about like how do we make sure that they have the capacities to do what they want to make happen and that we get to celebrate our communities right now?
I mean, that is important, you know. You're in a political show and you're going to be on KPFT and Pacifica Network and all these things here. But ultimately speaking, we have this term that we use that we say all politics is local. All artistry starts locally. You become a star. You gave an example of Beyoncé. She had her genesis in the church. She had a genesis within the Black community. Then she built layers around that. But she's one of the rare ones. And it may seem not so, but she's one of the rare ones that was able to grow that onion, the different layers upon her success. And I like, there's another important thing that I think I want everybody to hear out of what you said, because when folks are talking many a times about supporting or having not cutouts, but acknowledging BIPOC, many have a tendency to think what we're looking for is unearned equality, which what you're asking for is equal access to success, not equal success. You want to expand a bit on that?
All the time. Exactly. And I think that this is like what we, this one is actually to address the fact that for generations, our arts organizations of color have not had the same access to philanthropy, have not had the same access to funding or even just to capital. And actually, we've had generations that have had to face the fact that our art was never even thought about as art. That's nice for what you do, but that's not actually art, because art in so many generations has been defined by this white Western male gaze that only the things that were fit into the Museum of Fine Arts or fit into the Whitney became what was actually significant art. And really what we have been pushing and recognizing is that we need to shift what those opportunities are, so that that the people who actually need to generate what's important to our communities of color and to our artists of color should actually be experts within our artists in our own communities. And it doesn't necessarily need to have a Western academic lens in order to say that this is actually what art is. This is what is good is. I mean, let's just say, like we've seen how the idea of excellence, the term of excellence, has actually been weaponized against our communities of color. Mm-hmm. We've actually seen that because that it's only thought of as local, because it's only thought of as a Black idiom or a Latina idiom, that is never, it's not really excellent. It's not really worth the resources, because mariachi is good for mariachi for those communities, but that's not real music. And like, how many times have we heard that? How many times have we actually experienced the fact that our experiences, our histories, our like and our music has been belittled because it's not white Western enough? And I think that what we are trying to also say is that by shifting the dynamics with philanthropy, by actually adding our community leaders into the same space, we actually challenging each other in order to understand how do we really support the work in the way that it needs to be supported. What does that look like? How do we learn from each other in order to do better? And you know, and it's going to take a long time. We're recognizing that it's amazing that we have $12.4 million for this 5-year initiative. But
we're going to talk about that 12.5 million. But I just love so much of what you said there that I want to expand on it.
Sure,
Beethoven. Beethoven, okay, mm-hmm. And other types of music. So what's interesting is where the powers that controlled artistry would like to packetize it, as you'd said before, meaning Beethoven, nice, important music, calculated. It has the right cadence, the right thing. Mariachi, reggae, and all these other things. Ah, yeah, that's cool. What has been an equalizer is how we've had BIPOC folks take a violin, play Beethoven, put their spin on it, and make something more amenable to society as it is today. What is great is watching how other forms of Westernized artistry has adopted the artistry of BIPOC, incorporated it, and it then becomes okay. What is amazing is that outside of the powers, people themselves are putting all these artistries together. Now what's really needed, as you've been speaking about, is that financial backing. Your thoughts on that, and then let's go into what you are offering.
Well, I think that there's what we actually continue to think about is like this general arts ecosystem in which all of these things need to be supported, and the ways in which that we have our artists of color actually reinterpreting, rethinking, like remixing so many of these Western, like, you know, what we've learned as Western excellent, you know, kind of masters in that aspect, and utilizing, you know, you look at Kehinde Wiley, you look at, like, you know, like David McGee, who utilized the ideas of the painting masters and actually put Black faces, Black bodies into those spaces and twisting in that. And that's amazing. But then we also have other artists who are deeply just recognizing that these are the forms. This is the way that we just need to exist. And how do we actually remember, rekindle the relationships to, you know, our indigenous roots, and how do we actually celebrate that as a moment and without necessarily having to think about the lens of what history has told us as excellent. So how do we actually have a combination and a community in which all of these are coming together and actually saying that this is not better than this?
In other words, they can stand alone.
Absolutely. And that they should, and let's actually have the conversations as to why is this really, like, why is this radically important? Why is this really important? Why does this deserve the same level of engagement and the same level of excitement and resources? But then also, like, can we actually start learning from each other in ways? And it's like, where does a conversation happen? Where do we actually break down these ideas of I only do my thing, you can do your thing over there? And we're actually kind of interested in also, you're doing something great. How do we celebrate that? How do we all celebrate these things to recognize that we're actually part of this larger community and this larger ecosystem within Houston and beyond?
You know, Sixto, that is endemic with our, that is actually within us. Don't you like going to an Italian restaurant or a Jamaican restaurant or a Portuguese restaurant? And you're not asking the Portuguese restaurant not to cook Portuguese food. You like the difference. There is beauty in differences.
Absolutely.
In differences. Now, tell us a little bit about the fund, this fund that you're working with. And I think there's a deadline that you have in October to give away a lot of money to some independents. Talk to us a little bit about that.
So this fund is actually the first round of funding in a multi-year initiative. And, you know, as I said, it is currently $12.4 million over 5 years that has been invested for Foundation and Houston Endowment, Kinder, Powell, Cullen, and Brown Foundations. It's $12.4 million plus. This first round of funding is $2 million that's going to go out into our BIPOC communities that are supporting arts organizations and artist collectives that using a fiscal sponsor. And the deadline for the application is October 22nd. So it's a really quick turnaround, but it's a pretty easy application in terms of really understanding what are you doing and who are you doing and what are your goals for being like for 2022? And then how do these grants, which are going to range from $5,000 to $50,000, how could they actually help you live into your goals and live into your vision of what success might be? And this is an opportunity for our Latino, our Black, our Indigenous, our Asian, our Middle Eastern, all of our communities of color in Houston actually to utilize this application as an opportunity for recognition, for celebration. And, you know, we've even done a few things to help make the granting process a little bit easier in terms of some of the access is relatively easy, but we also have in language, like in Spanish, application guidelines and worksheets in order to make that happen. And if there are other language translations that we need, please just identify for that for us. And then we'll be working with the Alliance of Language of Network of Houston in order to help support that translation.
Now, Mr. Wigan, tell me again who this grant applies to.
So it is for the 9 county regions of Houston. So that is Austin, Brazoria, Chambers, Fort Bend, Galveston, Harris, Liberty, Montgomery, and Waller. And then it is for nonprofit organizations that have a significant arts and culture component and programming, as well as artist collectives or arts organizations that don't have a nonprofit status, but they can actually go through a fiscal agent in order to be able to apply.
Excellent. I always ask this as my last question. It's a tough one. What did I not ask you that you would have liked me to ask you?
There's so much to talk about this initiative and this work. And I think that what I'm most excited about right now is how the work that we are doing in terms of learning who's doing this, who has been doing this throughout the 9 county region, that is an opportunity for us to celebrate their work, but it's also an opportunity for us to learn from them, learn from what are they thinking? What are they doing, particularly in terms of the pandemic and how they have to respond, and how we as a collective philanthropic community leaders, artist leaders, actually can learn from them and learn with them in order to recognize where our resources can go, can be better utilized in the future, and how we can actually advocate for our communities in the future, and not just recognize that it's not just going to be about money, but it's about our long-term networks.
Mr. Wigan, where can everybody who qualifies fill out that application? Where do they go to fill that application out?
They should go to HoustonBANF.org as our website, and all of the information in terms of our guidelines, our application process, and the online application are all there. We've done a few information sessions that are on our YouTube page. All of that is accessible through our website, HoustonBANF.org.
Sixto Wigan, Project Director for BIPOC Arts Network and Fund, thank you so kindly for having been on Politics Done Right.
Thank you so much for the opportunity, and thanks for the conversation.
Today, we have the honor to speak to a special person. Norman Solomon is co-founder and national coordinator of
rootsaction.org. His books include War Made Easy, How Presidents and Pundits Keep Spinning Us to Death. It's 2006 book. And Made Love Got War, Close Encounters with America's Warfare State. Senor Solomon, welcome to Politics and Right. How are you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing fine, given the way the world is. Thanks so much for having me on.
Well, look, I mean, you wrote a piece that made it all over the place, from Common Dreams, Op-Ed News, you name it. And all I could do when I saw that piece was say that. Thank you. Title of your piece was Stop Calling the Military Budget a Defense Budget. And what you've really identified there, Norman, is how, in order for us to feel our monies are well spent, it's just about how we spend. Tell me a little bit about your article.
Yeah, it's really about language. And as George Orwell said, we can't blame language for making our thinking sloppy, but it helps to make our thinking sloppy. And so on the one hand, yeah, we have this thing, uppercase, proper noun, Department of Defense. But in our language, and this includes mainstream media, it includes politicians, it even includes progressives as a routine, we talk about defense spending, we talk about a defense budget, and that's sort of a insidious mindset that creeps in from this warfare state we live in, where, for instance, we got Kristen Sinema and Joe Manchin saying, oh, we can't afford $3.5 trillion over 10 years, which is $350 million each year, and yet the military is spending close to $1 trillion, close to three times that much every year. And we're supposed to accept that's defense. Now, when money is being spent to bomb Iraq, Afghanistan, Syria, Libya, Somalia, I don't think that's defense. You know, why are we conditioned to say that that's defense when it's our money being spent to bomb other countries that have nothing to do with us?
You know, isn't it true also that when we talk about the defense budget, most of those monies don't even go into the defense coffers, but into the coffers of private American corporations?
Well, definitely. It's a one through where the money's going to the military contractors. And so even when, for instance, in this 20-year war in and on Afghanistan that recently we're told ended, went up into, by some estimates, you know, a couple of $1 trillion, we're told that that money, some of it, or in addition to it, went to people in Afghanistan or to the Afghan army. But in fact, a lot of that money cycled right back to the Beltway bandits, you know, in Northern Virginia and in suburban Maryland around D.C. So it's Pentagon money, it's taxpayer money, but it goes, as you say, right into the coffers of these really, really huge corporations that are frankly making a killing on the Pentagon budget.
Now, interestingly, you made the excellent point about we are fighting over $350 billion per year for that $3.5 trillion program that isn't going to get passed at all at that level. Yet we are concerned about, we are not concerned about $1 trillion. And you have to look at the numbers. They, Sinema and Manchin, it seems to me, are fighting because they're, Manchin specifically said he didn't want to create an entitled mentality. It concerns me that aren't we seeing an entitled mentality for the defense industrial complex?
Absolutely. I mean, the Constitution talks about people's general welfare, the welfare of the people, and whatever you want to call it as a human right, we have, if you want to put it that way, if Manchin wants to put it that way, we do have an entitlement to healthcare, education, housing. But in the real world, inside the Beltway, the kind of status quo that the Manchins and Sinemas and Republicans are trying to perpetuate, the entitlement is for the military-industrial complex. And if they want to say that's some kind of radical left-wing thing, I just refer them to Dwight Eisenhower's farewell speech where he warned against the military-industrial complex. We have it like crazy now in 2021, and I'm encouraged that many progressives in Congress, because of the grassroots progressives who are raising hell about this, are more and more saying we see a connection between the efforts to deny healthcare, education, housing, senior care, elder care. We see a connection between that effort to deplete those kind of programs with the giveaways to the Pentagon. And in fact, The Pentagon budget has gone up and up. Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi a couple of years ago sent out a memo to the Democrats in the House and Senate boasting that they were supporting an increase from Donald Trump of 11% over 2 years of the Pentagon budget. And we saw now, just in the last few weeks, that again, the Congress in a bipartisan way has overbloated again the already bloated military budget.
Now, how comes we are unable to make the case as progressives to make the case that there should have been a peace dividend long time ago? Every time we end something, the Cold War, the Iraq War, the Afghanistan War, shouldn't all these different stoppages, if you will, or ends, if you will, have created a rationale for saying we don't have to spend as much anymore?
It's a notable point, and I think a very strong one. At the very time that President Biden was saying and ordering that the last U.S. troops would come out of Afghanistan, he was proposing a 1.6% increase in the military budget, but that wasn't good enough for the Republicans on the Senate Armed Services Committee. They more than doubled that increase, and the House went along with that. So we have a chronic problem. You know, Martin Luther King Jr. said that we can talk all we want about guns and butter, but when you spend so much money on guns, as he put it, you don't even get good oleo. And for those who maybe don't remember way back, oleo was oleomargarine.
You know, yes, I remember. Yes, oleomargarine.
That's the reality. And Dr. King also described the military spending in Vietnam as a demonic suction tube, which was draining away the essence of supporting the lives of people here at home. So if we're serious about health care for all, universal health care, if we're serious about education, making it a right, not a privilege for the wealthy, then we have to deal with, I think, two factors in the income stream. One is the tremendous depletion of our income through taxpayer dollars by the Pentagon. And the other is the giveaways to the rich through failure to do progressive taxation. And on both fronts, I think it's clearly going to be a struggle ahead.
Now, I want to stick a little bit here for a while longer before I get onto that other issue, which I think is very important, because I've heard many times that we have these bases all over the world, but you kind of put a fixed number onto it, 750 bases, more American bases than there are countries in the world.
Yeah, it really undermines the sort of reflex we're conditioned to use when we talk about, you know, defense spending and defense budget, you know, lowercase d. It is really stunning. I mean, it was to me a couple of years ago when I learned that the United States has, outside of our own borders, as you say, 750 different military bases scattered around the world. How many does Russia have? About two dozen. How many does China have? One. As a matter of fact, David Vine, who wrote the really seminal book, Base Nation, professor at American University, he points out that the vast majority of military bases that are outside of a country, the vast majority of that on the whole planet are U.S. bases. You know, we've got like three quarters of them. So that goes again to the question of what are we defending, supposedly? If you've got this huge imbalance of bases around the world and military might, and also the United States government spends as much as 10 times other countries. In other words, add up the other countries, number 2 to 11, in terms of military spending. The U.S. government spends more than all of those other 10 countries combined. And yet we're encouraged to believe we're on the defensive. And that really says something about the kind of propaganda we're subjected to here in the United States.
You know, interestingly, Norman, just on Sunday, General McMaster's appeared with Farid Zakaria on talking about China. And I wrote a blog about it where I don't want to say admonish Zakaria, because he's normally to the point and he's normally good. But he cut the general off when he made the statement. But the general said the following. The general said, you know, China no longer respects America because of all the problems we're having with the January 6th and all these other issues. And he said, and also China has seen that we are not modernizing our military and we are not spending as much as our military as we should. And then he said the funny thing, China increased its budget since 1995 by 400%. And somehow that is terrible that we haven't increased our budget proportionally. And what I did immediately, I didn't know the answer. So I went to check and see how much China spent and how much America spent. And it turned out that we spent about three times as much as China, even with their 400% increase. And that still to date, your statement is actually accurate that we spend more than the next several 10 or so countries beneath us in military budget. That is how this happens. You get a general casually making statements like that, and it becomes a reality. How do you and the work that you do help to mitigate that?
We really do need to recognize that the essence of propaganda is repetition. You know, you don't just see in your life one McDonald's ad, you see a gazillion of them. And the same thing is this unrelenting message. We are spending all this money on defense. We have to be stronger to be secure. We have to keep spending more and more. Dr. Martin Luther King called this what he called the madness of militarism. It was a madness in 1967 during the Vietnam War when Dr. King made that statement, and it's a madness today. And it's really a theft from the next generations. It's a theft from children now in this country and around the world. But there's huge amounts of money being made, and there's a revolving door. A lot of generals go from the Pentagon to the boards of these major military contractors without batting an eye. It's not considered anything but normal. We have to shatter that normality. And that's why I keep coming back to the importance of progressive movements and progressive outlets. And this is an unsolicited plug. This is a program online that people should support, because if we don't have alternatives to corporate media, we're going to keep going on the same downward road.
I appreciate that, Norman. And you gave the perfect segue for us to talk about the theft that's so important. The defense, but what we do with the defense budget is a transfer of wealth from the many to the few. And we do it industry. And I think I've seen you mention the word pharmaceutical somewhere in one of your articles. We do it from industry to industry to industry, where we invest. We are the socialists to the corporations, and then they profit on that. Again, your writing and what you do is so important for this particular moment, this particular movement, and that it is expected that you continue. The last question that I always ask is, what should I have asked you that I didn't?
One is how we're going to make this change specifically. You alluded to it. I'm very much a big supporter in organizing, because that's everything that has been done in this country to make it better is because people organize. I'm proud to be part of the organization RootsAction.org. I want to invite all of your viewers and listeners, sign up. It'll take you about 30 seconds and you'll get action bulletins. There's 1.2 million of us now on the RootsAction.org Action Bulletin Network. And we're doing a lot of stuff. We're deluging members of Congress. We're organizing at the grassroots. And everybody's welcome. So the welcome mat is open at rootsaction.org.
Well, Norman Solomon, co-founder and national coordinator of rootsaction.org, it's been my pleasure to have you on. You always have something positive to say, and you always leave us a lot smarter than we were before. Thank you so kindly for having been on Politics Done Right.
Oh, a very big pleasure to be with you. Thanks.
We hope that you enjoyed the program. Please remember that in as much as we are in fund drive mode, we make sure to give you a full program well-designed for the times that we are in. So please call 713-526-5738. Again, that is 713-526-5738. Show America, show Houston that you will support a station that respects you with the truth and respects you all down the line.
In the name of Politics Done Right, please select one of our books, several of our books, or one of our offers. We are here for you. You can get Politics Done Right Mondays through Fridays on Facebook Live at facebook.com/politicsdoneright, on YouTube Live at politicsdoneright.com/YouTube, Please do not forget to follow me on Twitter for updates. My handle is at Egberto Willis, at EGBERTOWILLIES. Before you get started, please remember to keep your community radio station in your minds, KPFT in your minds. Talk about it. Tell your friends about it. Tell them you know about this station in town, 90.1 FM Houston, that needs your support, that is there to provide what that nourishment that we need. 713-526-5738. KPFT.org. Visit us online. Contribute online. KPFT 90.1 FM. You can visit us at kpft.org. Please call 713-526-5738 or go to kpft.org and support us. You can support us with a $25 membership, a $40 membership, or you can get any one of our gifts that you find there. Please do this in the name of Politics Done Right. Also, remember that you can get one of my several books out there. As I See It, Class Warfare, The Only Resort to Right-Wing Doom, for a contribution of $120. It's Worth It, How to Talk to Your Right-Wing Relatives, Friends, and Neighbors, for a contribution of $120. How to Make America Utopia, Take Away the Economy from Those Who Rigged It, a pledge of $120. You can get any two of those books for $200, any three of those books for $250. That is to support our station. And all those books, I promise you, give you all that you need to have that conversation across the board to ensure, to help us make a better America. So please support us. Please support KPFT 90.1 FM Houston. Call 713-526-5738 or visit kpft.org. Hey, folks, we are at the end of the program. I hope you enjoyed what we had to offer. We will continue to give you fresh data, fresh programming every single week from Politics Done Right. My name is Egberto Willis. This is Politics Done Right. And you know how I end this baby. I am what? Out!
Welcome to Politics Done Right. I am your host, Egberto Willis. This is a progressive program that will take the mystery out of politics. This is the program that will encourage you to make sure government becomes we the people. Whether you are liberal, progressive, conservative, or otherwise, you get to air your point of view. We are an independent media outlet that, unlike mainstream media beholden to corporations, we only owe allegiance to you. Remember, you can also send me a tweet at EGBERTOWILLIES. That is at Egberto Willis. Let us engage.